everyone. You're listening to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Today, I have the honor and privilege of talking with a great engineer from the East Coast, Jacqueline Sanchez from Electric Garden Studios in Brooklyn, New York. Always a pleasure talking to people from the East Coast, a Berkeley grad, super, super talented, has worked with tons of great up-and-coming NYC artists, as well as worked on records for Katy Perry, Keith Urban. She's worked on records for Chic and Al Rogers. Super, super excited to have her on the podcast. Please help me welcome Jacqueline.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Jacqueline. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, let's get into it. I don't want to take too much of your time. It'll be about 30 minutes.
Okay, sounds good.
I've seen pictures of your place online. I've done some stuff getting mastered at the bakery. And so
amazing.
They were very nice to kind of connect us. And then I've also interviewed Poetic Thrust, I think, in the last couple of weeks. And they've done
I'm glad that happened. I mixed their more recent EP.
Yeah, yeah. So I had, that was the first podcast where we had three people on. And so it was good just to kind of toggle between the three of the main creators for that. Super energetic. Always nice to talk to people from the East Coast. I'm originally from Washington, D.C. I saw that you went to Berkeley. I went to Berkeley as well. And so, it just feels like we're coming full circle in a way.
That's awesome. Yeah. East Coast.
Yeah, and we're trying to also promote and get more females on the podcast. We've had a lot of men, and so we had two females at the end of last season, and you will be one of our females for this season. We're ending season three, going into season four.
Now. Okay.
It's an exciting time to be able to do podcasts, and we feel everyone has a story, and so we want to be able to share that from all kind of perspectives of the creative process of making and recording music.
Got you. That makes sense. Yeah, no, it's important for sure.
So I saw in your bio that in 2014, you began working with the Grammy-winning engineer Ben Kane, and you worked for artists like Chris Dave, PJ Morton, who I love, CeCe Winans, who I've known since I was a kid, learning the analog sound under his guidance. So kind of what was that experience like working with this type of engineer, and what were you kind of doing on those projects?
So in 2014, I met Ben Kane. The first project, basically I was an assistant engineer, and Ben Kane only mixes analog. So he doesn't use any plugins. So it's all using, at that time it was an AWS 900, like 24 channel console, and just a lot of outboard gear. So basically all of the audio gear that you see in the studio that I work at currently, Electric Garden, that all lived in a basement when I first met Ben, and I would assist him in this basement studio with all this amazing analog gear. And basically I was just an assistant. So I would do all the patches, do all like the old school recalls, basically writing down all the settings for every EQ, every compressor, and just really being in the room, kind of a very old school, kind of classic way of training your ear and training to become an engineer. That was my relationship on the majority of those projects. The CeCe Winans album, I was assisting and being a Pro Tools operator, like Pro Tools op, for the tracking of her, for at least half of her gospel album that came out a couple years ago that also won a Grammy for Best Gospel Album. So yeah, a lot of those artists in the beginning, that was just me assisting in my beginning of my career here in New York.
Yeah, so can you kind of go into like analog versus digital, just for like a layman, someone who doesn't kind of understand what that is, the old school versus the new school, and how they work together? Like, how does that kind of work with your setup?
Sure. Layman's terms. Absolutely. So analog digital, it's basically what's a layman's term? Just now, where are the words? Software versus hardware, right? So a computer, like being able to create music 100% with just a laptop or a computer versus being in an actual room where there's like a piece of gear for every possibility. So like in the old school musicians, like a bass player, a drummer, a guitarist, a singer, they'd all go to a studio, which is in a physical place, and set up microphones and record everything. And it would all be going through like hardware and a big console. Basically, a console is just like a mixing board, I guess, like a mixer. And yeah, so the difference now in terms of mixing in particular, when you're mixing your projects, is analog gear is like the hardware physical version. So there's now plugins and software. There's the equivalent in the physical world. So that's kind of the difference. And I don't know if that explains it in layman's terms. It's so much harder explaining these things verbally.
No, it does. So for me, and I understand it pretty well. So like, is it preference? Is it just because you have the gear? I mean, like, why would someone want to use one versus the other? Or or do you use both?
So me in particular, I use both, just because the reality is that with analog gear, there's a lot more commitment. It's a lot more difficult to do recalls. Recalling is like when you create music in a computer only, you can always save it and you can always open it up and it's exactly how you left it. Whereas in the analog world, it's a physical piece of gear in the real world. So, you know, time, someone could accidentally bump one of the knobs. Like, it's never going to be 100% the same as in that first time you got that mix or those settings, right? So your settings in the real world are a little bit more difficult to recall and aren't as 100% accurate as if opening a piece of software that like automatic, it's just data that gets saved, right? It's just ones and zeros. It's just digital information that, you know, is being converted to audio, versus in the analog world, it's electrical. It's just a different processing power. You know, it's I forget the term, but yeah, you're not converting it to a digital information. It's all in the real world, you know? So to answer your question about like why pick analog versus digital, or if you do both. So like Ben in particular, and through his lineage with Russell Elevato, which is a legendary mixing engineer as well, it's just more of a craft and an art form. And it's also, I think they've found their niche of artists that really value that analog sound. There is a difference in what you can capture and create using like tape machines and the actual hardware. And being a younger engineer, and just for versatility and budgets and things like that, it's expensive to book a recording studio that has all these gears and the engineering rate and the amount of time that it might take. Whereas in digital, it's more cost effective, right? I can mix from home, but I also try to get clients to at least book a day in the studio so that I can make revisions in the studio, so I can be in a treated room, and so that I can also maybe run certain elements through certain pieces of gear that I know can only do what that gear does. Every piece of gear has its own personality, its own character, its own like paintbrush. But I feel the same with plugins, right? So I just find that I appreciate both worlds and I value both. And I always try to push for people to experience both and figure out what's best for their sound, you know? But that's really why I'm a hybrid of both. Like, because of budgets, really. If they're up to me, I would prefer most of my sessions to be analog if I could be mixing analog.
Makes sense. I mean, that's definitely what the old school records were based on, and that's why they have the longevity of standing the test of time, because they were built to last in a different way than kind of what we're doing now, even though still some very good, solid 100% digital albums as well. And so you're currently working, recently you built Electric Garden Studio in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And so what's like the history of this studio being created in this way? And I think when I saw pictures of it, everything looked purple in the studio.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
I heard that D'Angelo recorded there as well. Is that correct?
D'Angelo was our first booking. Yeah, absolutely. He was our first book client officially when we opened. So I guess a brief history, I have to really shout out my mentor and boss and audio lineage that I'm a part of is, so Ben Kane, I've worked with him for 7 years now, right? 7 or 6 years, like not doing the math correctly. And I just remember, you know, after working with him for like 2 or 3 years, just him being like, I want to build a studio. I hope you want to be a part of it. Like, hope you're down. And then I didn't like really hear much about it till 2016, where I hadn't heard from him in a while. There wasn't a lot of projects we were working on yet. And then that's when he called, being like, I signed the lease. I found the location. we're really going to do the studio. We got to do a Kickstarter. And it was just kind of like, okay. And at that time I was considering moving to LA, but once the lease was signed, I kind of decided to stick to ride this out, see what happened. So I had no clue that I was going to become a Kickstarter entrepreneur and a construction worker for the next couple of years. And then in 2018, we opened Studio A officially. And then the following year, we opened Studio B. And so then his lineage is through Russell Lovato. And Russell Lovato is who created the D'Angelo sound on Voodoo and all of those things. And so it's just more of like he had all access to all of this analog gear, but it didn't have like an adequate home. And also his vision was to create like a space unlike anywhere else. Like when he spoke to the architect, he described the building to be inspired as if, imagine if the Dalai Lama and George Clinton went to a female-run planet, what kind of building would they design, kind of thing. And so our space is really about warmth and creativity and feminine energy, a lot of circles and comfort and nurturing. And so kind of like a organic, natural, psychedelic, spacey influence. It really, really is like another experience, like when you come into the space, honestly. So that's why there's a lot of purples. We have a live plant wall.
Right. As you talk about having that female energy, and that's definitely an interesting analogy of how that was created. How is it being a female in such a male-dominated field?
I feel very, very fortunate that a lot of my career journey, I've been with very amazing mentors who supported me strongly, right? So I don't think I've had a lot of similar experiences compared to other stories I hear from other women in our industry. In college at Berkeley, one of my teachers and professors that influenced me the most was Susan Rogers. And she was a Prince's engineer back during the Purple Rain era. And just having teachers like that kind of, how do I explain that? It's such a difficult topic to explain because there's a lot of stuff that does happen. It's very subtle, like micro things that happen. Like I definitely know in the beginning of my career, I used to like make sure I don't wear makeup and make sure I don't do certain things so that I can like seem like I'm serious about my career. And then the older and more mature I got, eventually I would be like, F that, I'm gonna wear red lipstick when I go to my session because I feel like it, like it shouldn't matter kind of thing. So little things like that throughout my career, I've learned to like embrace my femininity, embrace the fact that I'm a woman, because that's actually, I think, makes me a better engineer. I also used to do like corporate sound as a sound engineer. And I just remember I would be like the smallest, young, little petite, only woman on this like team of techs. And all of them are like older white men with ponytails and like, and they just, it was just interesting in the beginning. I could tell they would like kind of question everything I would do and like test me a lot. And then by the end of the gig, they're hiring me for other gigs, you know? So it's kind of like just really being confident in what I have to offer and like also knowing that it's okay to ask for help. Like it's okay that I can't pick up every amp or every piece of gear by myself, you know? So I think in the beginning, a lot of overcompensating used to happen. And then later on, it's kind of just trusting what you bring to the table, really.
I hear that. Well, it sounds like you've had a pretty good experience overall. Now, I saw you also worked previously on other notable projects, including Blue Note artist Takuya Kuroda and Habana Entrances pianist Diamir Gonzalez and some other NYC rising musicians. So what's the experience of working with people in New York? You've also done stuff in LA, but like what's the New York vibe and Blue Note having such a huge history there, you know, with jazz and other stuff, like how is it working with these kind of more eclectic types of artists?
So Takuya, actually the record we worked on, I was the tracking engineer for a majority of his album called Zigzagger. And it was actually ended up being on Concord Records. He left Blue Note on that record. But Takuya was an incredible artist. That was actually my first like gig as like the official tracking engineer. It was a little scary because I was like, am I ready? But I was ready. And it was really inspiring. I mean, that's a good story to tell in terms of being a woman and then also like knowing what you're bringing to the table. So that was like my first big tracking session where I was going to be like, I was running the tracking sessions the way that I had been taught through Ben and just other mentors too in my engineering career. But in recommending what at that time Electric Garden didn't exist yet, and our basement studio was too small for the session. So I was like shopping which studio to go to. And I remember one of the studios that I know other male engineers have worked at. I won't name who they are, but I went to do a studio tour, and the owner of the studio was trying to tell me that they would not let outside engineers work in the studio, that it has to be the one of their engineers. And when I went for the tour to like discuss the how the flexibility of that, it was very condescending and very like, we don't have time to teach you what you need to know. Like, we can't be teaching you while we are on sessions. And it was just like this awkward thing. It was the more affordable option. And I was really torn because I was trying to find like an affordable best option. And then the one that I wanted was a little more expensive, and like just knowing how to like navigate that. And like, that was like a lesson in like putting my foot down and being like, that's not where I'm going to work. Like, if they're not even respecting my, what I'm bringing to the table. So Takuya was super supportive in that move. And like, and just him being in that scenario, he's like, no, F that. Like, let's go to this other studio. And we recorded at Brooklyn Recording, which is in Brooklyn, but owned by this great engineer named Andy Taub, who's also another good mentor. And just, it was just, it was a great experience. And it was just like a moment of like, kind of like standing up for yourself, and then also picking like the best space. Cause I think as an engineer, like you're creating the space for artists to create their music, you know? And it has to have the good vibes. It has to have the, it's also technical, but it's also like vibe wise. And like, is it gonna suit the artist's personality, the artist's creativity, and the sound as well with the type of gear they offer. So yeah, I mean, working with artists like Takuya and just a wide variety of artists, I realize I work with a lot of jazz influenced jazz and like fusion artists. And I also like hip hop that had a live band like Poetic Thrust. And I recently just worked on a choir that was like a full all women resistance revival chorus. Like, that was a project that like we recorded and mixed and everything. It was really, really great. But I think the key thing with working with so many different artists and different genres is just really building your relationship with the artist and getting to know their personality and the needs of the project. Because every project, your role kind of shifts in what you do kind of thing, whether how assertive you are with certain things, and also just creating the space for artists to feel comfortable.
Exactly. And you've had in your career some interesting moments in dealing with different artistry. I saw that you... just getting out of Berklee College of Music, you moved to New York, and then you were working for producer and chic bassist Jerry Barnes.
Yes.
At the historic Avatar Studios, previously known as Power Station. And you worked on projects with Chic and Nile Rodgers, Roberta Flack, and just like a laundry list of like a who's who of music. And so
yes,
being so young at the time, like, what were you trying to learn the most in that experience with someone like Jerry Barnes, who, you know, created some very iconic music and sounds?
Yeah, I mean, Jerry Barnes to me, it was like, so that was my first gig straight out of college. I definitely feel like it got my training wheels off as an engineer. I felt like every day I was scared that I was going to mess up. So Jerry was like the best. I think Jerry Barnes is the best person to work for if you're a new engineer, because he is, you know, in his late, you know, he's been in the game for a long time. Since he was, you know, he's been around for since he saw the transition from analog to digital. And so working with him was very, very, it gave me such tangible experience. Every single day I was recording, editing, doing vocal tuning, drum editing. And then whenever we would do tracking sessions, it was my responsibility to bring all the files, but I would never be the tracking engineer, but I would get to shadow the tracking engineers in the legendary rooms. Cause Jerry had a small room with this incredible gear, but like it was a small little closet at Avatar basically. He would call it Hillbilly Studios. but like had like incredible vintage, like a vintage Neve and like LA-2A, and then his mic collection was just incredible, and like classic microphones, just stuff he's collected over his throughout his career. And working with him was just it was very fun, very intimidating initially. It was like I had to also know how to set up his MPC, because he would still use an old MPC to make his beats and stuff. And he would, I mean, it would be incredible to be like tuning vocals all day, but he would be playing like incredible bass in the background, like just as we're tuning and editing, he'll be like, that's still a little flat, and then like play an amazing bass lick while I'm editing. So it was really beautiful to just be immersed in music every day. I kind of miss the dynamic of working with like one artist or producer daily, because I think you get to build a really strong like workflow, creative flow. I think that's really, really important in general for the creative process. So it was incredible. Yeah. I really think I'm the engineer I am today. A lot has to do with Jerry, for sure.
I can see that. Now, I also saw that you assisted in mixing and recording engineer Joe Zook. And, you know, they've worked on top 40 records of a lot of pop. So One Republic, U2, Pink, Katy Perry, One Direction, Keith Urban, so many artists that are like top musicians of their thing. So how is it kind of being in that experience working with Joe?
You know, I met Joe because he mixed Joe DaQuest is a very big Brazilian band that Jerry produced their album. And I happened to be in LA the week that Jerry went there to mix. So I got to tag along to the mix sessions. And I met Joe Zook, you know, as Jerry's engineer. And like, I'm the one that prepped all the files and sent it to him. And so it was very interesting because this is pre-Electric Garden. This is pre me knowing that I was going to plant some roots here by building this studio with Ben. So I was still kind of like working with Jerry, but teaching part-time at a after-school program for music and like, you know, trying to survive in New York. And so I met Joe Zook that year when he mixed that album. Never really thought about LA or him, like never really connected with him again until like a year later, he emailed me asking if, because I think I had mentioned I might move to LA, and he was like, did you move to LA? And like, are you available to work next week? And like, I kind of skipped the first question and was like, I'm available. So like, I kind of quit my teaching job and like just went to LA just to like make it happen kind of thing. And so I assisted him for a week because his other assistant engineer, like kind of, I don't know what happened, but he needed somebody very quickly. And it was amazing. I mean, definitely it's just every person has a different workflow. And I got to like see, you know, his space is really, really awesome. He, I believe, mixes very like hybrid, still very in the box, very digital, but definitely processing certain things through different gear. And it was just, it's, you know, just, it was a really cool opportunity to be in LA. I was in LA for about a month and I got to do a couple other freelance sessions out there. And you learn a little bit of everything. Like every engineer has certain things or producer that you pick up from, you know, like Jerry taught me file management and recording etiquette and flow and editing and things like that. Two vocal tuning was crucial with Jerry. And then with Joe Zook, I learned a lot about like session prep and like how to work, how to flow in Pro Tools a lot quicker when you're mixing so many songs. Cause I think when you're in the top 40, when you're at that top 40 level, the amount of work you're getting is just so frequent. Like you have to have like a very good pace of how you're flowing. So it was incredible to watch how he would flow in Pro Tools, like just certain like key commands and things that I just never really used or needed or saw anyone do before. And they also kind of understanding a little bit more of like the pop world and how like sound replacement is really big to get, make sure you get the proper drum sound and things like that. So it was really, really awesome. And, you know, but in the end, I ended up coming back to New York and choosing to work with Ben. I feel like with Ben, I have a little more freedom with like my own creativity and just like Ben is still, I feel, up and coming as well. And so it's kind of cool to be building with him. Whereas with Joe, I think I would have been in that assistant role for a lot longer of a period of time, you know?
Yeah, so. I definitely understand that. I really like also how you said you always consider yourself a student to your craft, refining your ability to be a sound catcher. And so your mission is to help others create their art while making sure the sonic quality adheres to what the music asks and needs. And you state specifically, at the end of the day, without great music, there are no great engineers. So 2020 has been a huge learning experience for everyone. How have you refined your craft this year?
I mean, my first step this year, ironically, right before the pandemic, like kind of shut us down. I mean, I was just thinking my bio back then was really good. You have an old bio, but I got to go back to that one. this year, how have I adapted or everything? So at the top of this year in February, I made the difficult decision of, with an album that meant a lot to me, that I was trying to figure out whether I try to get them to book studio time and we try to condense a 14-song album over the span of a few days because of the budget to mix it versus having this project invest in my home setup so that I can mix it with less pressure from my home setup. And that was a really difficult decision because I, like I said, I would have preferred to mix it at the studio primarily. And in that moment, something in my intuition was like, you know what? Like, if I can have more flexibility in my mixing capabilities from my house setup, then I do think in the big picture, it'll lead to more possibilities of booking the studio when it's possible, you know? And so I kind of said yes to myself and yes to like freeing myself a little bit from feeling like I can only work at the studio kind of thing. And then the pandemic hit, which was kind of like perfect timing to really learn my room, really learn. I've been building sound panels in my house. And like, just like I did like all these acoustical tests to pick the sweet spot in my room, in my living room, and like invested in like, it was just, I invested in certain plugins and certain hardware that, you know, still at a lower cost, but it was just really empowering. And I was kind of like, it was perfect timing with the pandemic because people's, you know, as you know, music for musicians, the pandemic has hit really, really hard, especially for touring musicians, and tours is what would fund their projects, you know? So to me, it's been just grateful to know that you always have to be willing to be flexible and figure out like flexibility with your craft. Flexibility and adapting is a constant. Like you said, you're forever a student, and a student, not just in like the technical aspect, but even in the social influence that's happening in the industry, period, and globally. So yeah, to me, that was the game changer was investing and taking time to make sure that I can independently mix from wherever.
Yeah, that's definitely the wave of the future. So as we start to wrap up, Jacqueline, again, thanks again for being on today. We wanted to ask all of our guests two rapid fire questions that we think are just important, being experts in your field. And so the first one, what advice would you give a young engineer starting out today?
It's so difficult because the best advice I would be is to never stop being a student, to surround yourself with really good mentors, and make sure to understand your purpose and reasoning of why you want to be an engineer. I find that the best engineers really love music, like really, really love music, and are probably musicians themselves. I find that those are like the three things. Like, make sure you love what you love music, because it comes with a lot of sacrifice and time and investment. And it's a lifelong journey of becoming a great engineer. It's a lifelong craft, just like it is being a lifelong musician.
Well said. I think those are all three great points and three things that someone young needs to hear, and they will hear it here first. And so lastly, what do you want your recording legacy to be when all is said and done? And maybe it's too early in your career, but you know, 30, 40, 50 years from now, if we could zoom and fast forward, what would you ultimately want to be remembered for in the recording space?
I ultimately would like to be remembered for creating safe, you know what, I think music heals the world, and I think music is very healing. And I think at the end of the day, my only goal in life is to work with artists and music that aligns with helping this world become a better place. So I just hope that by the end of my career, some of the songs that I just hope that I get to work on music that will last lifetimes and be able to heal the world. Like Bob Marley's music that is still relevant to this day, you know, that's my goal.
Well, that is definitely a lofty goal, and you're well on your way. I think that's the dream, to be able to have something that lasts and outlives you, you know, planting seed today for trees that someone else can sit under tomorrow. And I think musically there's some great stuff out there, but I think we need to continue to add to that, you know, the lexicon of music and having artists that are up and coming and engineers that are up and coming, because that's how we continue to progress forward. And, you know, we have a lot of older artists that are still doing stuff out there and living a long time, but we also have new artists and new opportunities. And so it's good to have that good cross-pollinization of the old and the young, as, you know, music is something that keeps, You got to keep stirring the pot. There's always new things added and mixing the old and new together. So we've had such a pleasure having you on, Jacqueline. We'll definitely circle back to you when this is out. So you have the links to everything. It'll be on all the streaming platforms. But super excited and stoked to have you on season 3 of Deeper Grooves Podcast. And we look forward to keeping in touch with you and hearing more about your illustrious career and the studio at Electric Garden and all the great stuff that's pumping out of there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun talking to you. So,
all right, we'll talk soon. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in once again to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Always love getting some female energy on the podcast, and we had a blast talking with Jacqueline Sanchez, senior engineer for Electric Garden Studios on the East Coast based in New York. We would like to thank our engineer, Tim Hall, and 1192 Studios for mixing and mastering this recording today as well. If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, you can check us out online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves or anchor.fm/deepergrooves. Until then, stay funky, be you. No one can tell you you're doing that wrong. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.